Okay, today, I told you last week we were going to speak on today the subject of church structure, and particularly deacons and elders. And I'll be honest with you, it was starting out, I'm not going to say it wasn't something that I wasn't looking forward to or not comfortable with, but it's not really something that I thought about a whole lot previously or studied, and I'd really gotten into it very little until the last few weeks when I started looking at it. And it really turned out to be, it's been helpful, not only as far as church structure goes, but as far as how I apply things to my individual life. If you get into this, this is really good for Christian growth. Okay? Originally, when Brother Leo was here, it was a situation where he basically, and we know this, he handled everything. Okay? And that's the way he wanted it, and that's the way things were done for years. Any issues that there were, it went through him, and he would meet with individuals, and it worked. And then obviously, none of us were prepared for what happened last August. So as a church, and all of us as individuals, we're kind of praying for guidance. We still are. We're praying for guidance. We were praying for really which direction to go. And we were just kind of like the children of Israel out there wandering around, not really knowing which direction to go or what to do. And so originally the thought was, a couple of people had come up to me about it, and we'd spoken and felt like it was good to do this. And the original thought was we would do it in October or November. And if you'll remember back the week that we were sending Patrick, when we packed up and y'all took the stuff up to the mountains, up to Elizabethton, I had spoken with Benford about it, and Benford was going to teach on deacons, elders, church structure. So I was out at the door. We were loading stuff up. It was on a Wednesday, I think, Wednesday, Thursday. Or it was on a Wednesday because you guys had your Bible study that day. So Benford comes off the hill. He pulls in front. He sees me, and he says, "Hey, can you pull over to the side? Walk over here to the side." So he pulls over, and he said, "I just think it's too soon. I've heard some things back. I don't want to hurt feelings. I don't feel like it's the time yet that we need to move this quickly. It's just, I think things still need to settle a little bit." So we decided, I said, "That's fine." So now I know a couple of weeks ago, some other individuals had spoken to me, and I said, "Look, if we can get to March, let's do this in March." So that's kind of where we're at now. So, you know, it's been several months, so it's time to talk about some of these things, I think. So, but elders and deacons are the things that we want to look at. Now, I want to say this. As we get into this, I want you to look at some of the things we talk about and say individually, how can I apply this to my life? Don't look at this and say, "Well, this is for elders and deacons or those individuals. I don't qualify, and let's move on to next week." This is really good for Christian growth. So everybody needs to really, I know I have. Yeah, I took a totally different, once I got into it, it was totally different the way it applied to me than what my original approach was. Totally different. So it's been very good. So there are two offices in the local church, okay, of church structure. They're the overseers, which are the elders, plural, and the deacons, plural, okay? Overseers and deacons. In the New Testament, once we get in, Peter speaks some about it, James speaks some about it, Paul speaks quite a bit about it, okay? So go to Philippians chapter 1, verse 1. Philippians chapter 1, verse 1. And this is just going to be an introduction. So just keep in mind, there are two offices, okay? Elders, deacons. So we're going to look at, you know, which one are there? And I know in previous conversations I've had with individuals here, when they asked about it, I'm like, well, we need to study this. I don't know. Is it elders? Is it deacons? Is it both? Is it neither? What is it? Well, they speak quite a bit about both, and we get an idea and structure how they kind of line up with each other. So Philippians 1:1, just an introduction. Paul and Timothy, bond servants of Christ Jesus, so this is Paul writing, to all the saints in Christ Jesus who are in Philippi, including the overseers and deacons. Okay? So when he starts out any of his epistles, he's addressing the individuals, obviously, to whom he's writing to, the members of the churches. So when he addresses the members of the churches at Philippi, he includes the overseers and the deacons. Okay? Oh, you say, well, we have talked about overseers, and we'll get to that. Overseers, that's elders. Okay? The King James Version translates this as bishop. The Greek word is episkopos. That is E-P-I-S-K-O-P-O-S. I'll spell it one more time. E-P-I-S-K-O-P-O-S. Episkopos, which literally means above looking, someone up above looking down as an overseer, okay? It's somebody that's not up there as a judge or something like that, or somebody that's better than somebody else, but somebody that, if I'm standing up here, I can see everybody. I can see what's going on. So that's basically what it's saying. Now, turn to Titus chapter 1, verse 5. And when you turn to Titus 1, leave it there. We'll be going some other places, but leave it in Titus. So Titus chapter 1, verse 5. Okay, Titus chapter 1, verse 5. So Paul has already addressed the church in Philippians and said, and has included the saints, and included overseers and deacons, elders and deacons, okay? All right. So Titus chapter 1, verse 5. So this is Paul. For this reason, I left you in Crete, that you would set in order what remains. So he's left, and he says, now, I've got you going. It's going to be up to you guys. I've set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. So Paul is saying, why appoint it in every city? Well, the cities, that's where the churches are at. So the cities that we've established churches, in every one of them, he says, appoint elders. Okay? So Philippians 1:1, Titus 1:5, when he introduces In the first chapters of both of those, he says, he addresses, yes, we've got elders, we've got deacons, okay? Now, today, I started practicing on this last night. Jonathan, I know it's hard to believe, but I ran pretty long. So, I'm just going to do elders today, and we're going to do deacons next week. Don't look at your... Well, we're not going to go that long, I promise. Okay, so... we're going to look at elders, and now, like I said, I know we've got several out today. I think most of them will be back last week or next week, so I want to review this into next week and then get into deacons, and I think it'll be good over a two-week period. So today, we want to address the elders part, okay? So the elders, here are the duties of elders. Provide spiritual oversight. Make decisions for the church. And teach/preach. Okay? Elders, provide spiritual oversight, make decisions for the church, and teach and or preach. Elders are going to be a little bit more confined in the job requirements, or what they must be able to do, rather, than what deacons are. There's more people that would be able to fill the deaconship than there are the eldership, because quite frankly, everybody can't teach. Okay? That's like me. Everybody can't sing. Everybody can't play the piano. You know, Paul spoke about gifts, and teaching, preaching would be a gift that was given. So everybody can't do that. Now, you'll find the deaconships apply to a lot more people. Okay? So they provide spiritual oversight, they make decisions for the church, and they teach or preach. So you'll see the elders are basically handling the spiritual aspect of it. Okay? The spiritual aspect of it. Now turn to Acts chapter 20. So far we know we've got elders and deacons. We've got two offices in this hierarchy. So elders provide spiritual oversight, make decisions for the church, teach or preach. Okay? Now, I know in all the things that I've studied in chapter 20, it goes verse 17 through 30. So when you have time, you can read that on your own. I'm not going to do that. Paul's basically laying down what he's done as an example. But verse 28 is where you really get to the nuts and bolts of where it talks to elders, okay? Where you get an idea here. So Acts 20, verse 28. Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock, which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. Okay, so think about this. He's speaking to the elders. He's speaking to the overseers. And he says, be on guard, not only for yourselves, but for all the flock. Okay, so the first thing you think about would be sheep, something like that, right? Well, to shepherd the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. So elders are like shepherds, protecting their flock. Well, protecting their flock from what? Does this mean that I sit at the door with a gun, and the first person that comes in here looking fishy, or I think might shoot up the place, I blow him away at the door, or I do? That's not what it's talking about, okay? It's talking about spiritually. You take care of the flock. So, from what? From false teaching, from heresies, from things like that. Paul was doing it all the time. Think about Galatians, right? So he had preached or taught to them about grace, and then individuals came in, the Pharisee believers came in and said, no, you've got to be circumcised, you've got to keep the commandments, you've got to do all this. And what did Paul say? You foolish Galatians. We taught you this, you knew the gospel of grace, now you've gone away from it. Paul was shepherding the Galatian church, right? That's what he was doing. He was practicing that as a elder, really, of that church. So he was guarding them from false doctrine, all right? Now, I said keep your finger in Titus. Go back to Titus and let's look at verse 9. We did Titus 1, verse 5 a while ago. Now let's look at Titus chapter 1, verse 9. Now in verse 5, what we read a while ago, Paul said, for this only reason I left you in Crete, that you would set in order what remains and appoint elders, right? So 4 verses later, in verse 9, he says, holding firmly the faithful word. So what did we just say that elders did? It was that they made sure that the word was taught, and it was taught correctly, okay? Holding firmly the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able to both exhort in sound doctrine and then refute those who contradict it. All right? So he's got two things he's got to do there. He's got to exhort in sound doctrine. What's that teach? That's what I'm doing right now. I'm exhorting. I'm encouraging. I'm teaching. Okay? They've got to be able to do that, but they've also got to be able to refute those who contradict it. What's that mean? If somebody gives false doctrine, I'm able, or we all are able to say, that's not correct. Here's why it's not correct. We can teach it. Okay? We've talked about in some things, sometimes we go down rabbit holes on some of the presentations up here, and I've told you, why do we need to know this? Why do we need to know that in the gospel of grace, it may say this somewhere in the Bible, but it says this in the gospel of grace. Why is that important? It's because if somebody tries to confuse the second coming and the rapture, things like that. If somebody tries to confuse you with something and say, well, the rapture's already happened, you've been left, you've got to go through the tribulation, to some people that may not be important, but you're able to say, no, that's not right, and here's why it's not right. That's why we've gone through a lot of these things, and that's what Paul's saying here. You've got to be able, if you hear these, if Jehovah's Witness comes and knocks at your door, you can tell him what they're giving you is not the good news. Okay? So that just becomes with being in the Word and spiritual maturity. So that's something, like I said, that is a requirement for the elder, but that's something that we all need to be able to do. If we witness to somebody or we talk to somebody, conversation comes up all the time. I went to Blackberry Trail to the golf course Friday. I just wanted to get away. I didn't even play. I just went around, hit a bucket of golf balls and tinkered around on the putting green for a little bit. And there were two guys to my left, and they were both from Atlanta. And they had family in Florence. I know, because I eavesdropped, Missy. I was nosy. I listened to, I'm like this, you know. So I'm listening to the whole thing. And one of them was a pastor, and another one went to another church, and he was talking about the church and what they were doing. They were both really excited about where they went, and I listened to the whole thing, and they were talking about the Lord, and I enjoyed their conversation. But you hear, you're out, and you hear people like that, and I agree, it was great what they were sharing. But you'll hear people talk about stuff, that you may run across it, and what they're saying is not. It's not right. It's not correct. Okay? Now, I'm not saying bust in and say, oh, no, this is where you're wrong. But I'm saying you need to know. You don't fall for that stuff, okay? We all need to be able to do that. Now, qualifications. We talked about duties. Duties for elders. Provide spiritual oversight. Make decisions for the church. Teach and preach. Now, qualifications. The qualifications. Mature. Blameless character and behavior, and able to teach. Those are the qualifications. Okay, so turn to 1 Timothy chapter 3. Keep your finger there at 1 Titus 2. We're going to go back, or Titus chapter 1 as well. But first go to 1 Timothy chapter 3, 1 through 7. Okay, now you remember me telling you about this being the study really helping you for spiritual growth, and it can speak to all of us, and we all need to apply this to our lives. Here is where we start getting to. Okay, here's where we start getting to. And as you read this, I want you to think about, because I didn't go into this, reading this thinking, Lord, help me. Help me get out of my life, the things out of my life that don't need to be there, and help me get the things in that need to be there. I didn't go into this, Cameron, thinking about that. By the time I got three or four verses in, Judy, I was going, oh my goodness. Okay? Oh my goodness. So take it as you read these. You know, you're not looking at the next guy. I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at myself. It's self-introspection, right? So 1 Timothy 3. Verses 1 through 7. So Paul's writing to Timothy. Paul knows he's not going to be here much longer. Timothy is going to have now, the Paul's left it to him. He's going to have to run the churches, okay? So verse 1. It is a trustworthy statement that if any man aspires to the office of overseer, okay, so elder, all right, it is a fine work he desires to do. Verse 2. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife. Now, let me stop right there for a minute. The husband of one wife, okay? We look at this as, okay, you're not divorced, you've got one wife and things, but there's, I want to say this as well. We've spoken about, when you read the Bible, remember who wrote it, who they were speaking to at the time they were speaking. This was not written to the Jewish churches. This was written to the Gentile churches. This was written that they were not under the law. They didn't have the law. They come out of abject paganism. I mean, they were basically living in the middle of San Francisco. And that's what they were coming out of. And that's what the culture was. Okay? It was nothing at that time for a man to have multiple wives. Okay? He would have multiple wives. So I'm sure that there were people that were coming into that church when they became a believer, they may have had several wives. How they afforded them, I don't know. But they would have had several wives. Okay? So, it ain't the wives, it's the kids, Missy. So anyway, forget I said that. So anyway, so they may have had several. There's a guy, I don't know where you may get your news from, but I saw this thing, it wouldn't be reported on network news, but he's an imam, he's a Muslim, he's in England, and it's made, you may have seen it. I saw it yesterday a couple times. So they've had just a Muslim takeover in England, okay? All your major cities now have Muslim mayors, and they have high 30, 35, 40%. London, Birmingham, Leeds, just all those. Liverpool, huge amount population of Muslims. So the imam said, the Quran states that we, as men, we can have up to four wives. Okay, so that's what they're praying. We can have up to four wives, and they're all of the Muslim faith. And then you have concubines that are not of the Muslim faith. So basically saying those who are not Muslims, we'll take them. Okay? So he was saying four wives by the Quran. All right? So Paul's saying here, no, you've got one wife. Okay? Now that's open to debate, but you've got to keep that in mind also. Okay? I think people who have been divorced shouldn't feel, I think sometimes people who have been divorced come through the ministry or they come into the church and say, I can't do anything, I've been divorced. Now, they should not think that way. Okay, God can use us all. All right, so just keep that in mind. All right, okay, now, here we go. Temperate, okay? So I can calm my temper. All right, oh me. Self-controlled. I've got self-control, Jonathan. Man, I don't get rattled. I don't get upset. Nothing gets to me.
Well, me and you,
we got one. Right? Well, that don't. Respectable. I can show respect to others. Okay? Hospitable. We know what that means. I show hospitality, man. I would give them the shirt off my back. I love doing things. I'm not saying I do. I'm giving you the definition. I'm giving you the definition, okay? So I love doing it. I'll do anything for anybody. That's what hospitable means, okay? So those are things right there. Those are requirements for elders, okay? Do I have that in my life? Can I control my temper? Do I love other people? Do I do good to people? I think what he's saying here, number one, if you're an elder, you got to be a people person. You need to be think about others. I heard a Bible teacher, I've listened to several on these things, and he was saying, if you are an introvert and you don't like people, you know, then you're going to have a hard time being an elder. Because being an elder is about being about other people. And then I'm sitting here reading this and I'm going, all right, what have I got in my life here that I need to do better at? I need to get rid of. I need to do better. And look, it ain't easy. It's not easy. Doing good for somebody that does evil to you, we spoke about forgiveness last week, not easy. Okay? Not losing your temper when things go wrong. Having self-control. Having all that. It's not easy. But as an elder, as an overseer, as a person in responsibility, that's a requirement. And as individual believers, we just wouldn't say, well, whoever gets that elder job, he better have all this in check. Well, we as Christians need to have all that in check. If we don't, we need to work on it. Nobody's perfect. I'm certainly not. I'm talking to David Sisk. I'm not talking to anybody else. Okay, I need to have that. Okay? Skillful in teaching. Okay? We're still in verse 2. Skillful in teaching. Verse 3. Not overindulging in wine. Okay? So I don't want somebody, you know, you don't want an elder coming to church drunk telling everybody what to do, right? Not a bully. I thought this was interesting. You look, I didn't think the word bully was going to be in the Bible, but here it is, Ken. Not a bully. Okay? Not coming in because, hey, I've got this position of an elder. I'm just going to come in. I'm going to run over everybody. Okay? That's not what that is. Okay? That goes back. It talks about being self-controlled. Not a bully. Loving other people. Being about other people. Now, you want to stand up for the right thing. You're going to stand your ground, but you don't run over people. Okay? Gentle. Not contentious. Okay? Not stirring up stuff. There are people, you know them, I know them. They're not happy unless they're keeping something stirred up. They're in the church. They're in play. That's why churches split. There's plenty of those people in churches. Okay? They're not happy unless they keep something stirred. All right? That person can't be an elder. If that person's an elder and that's what they thrive on, then Judy, you're going to have chaos. Okay? You can't have it. All right? And then free from the love of money. Hey, that's just not all he thinks about. Okay? It's not a greedy individual. He must be one. Now, let me say this before I get to any of that other stuff. To me, this is just practicality. Now, this is spiritual, but it's practical too. If I owned a business, if I hired somebody, if I was a coach, and I wanted players on my ball team, if I worked with people, if I'm choosing friends and choosing people that I hang out with and spend time with, these would be requirements. I mean, they would. Do you want to work with somebody who's just a gossip, and just stirs up the office? I mean, you don't want to work with somebody like that. You don't want to work with a bully. You don't want to hire somebody like those individuals like that because they just they just destroy your culture. Church culture, corporate culture, they bring stress into your life. Okay? So, just the right kind of people, and we need to look at ourselves I need to look at myself and say, do I have that? Am I that kind of person? I need to work on those things. Okay? We don't need to eliminate, and here's another thing. We don't need to eliminate ourselves from being able to serve God because we've got some of this stuff in our life and we say, well, can't do it. I'm not qualified, can't do it. I'm speaking to me. And instead of working on it, just saying that eliminates me, I can't do it. Okay? We need, these are things that we need to work on. These are things as Christians. Okay? This is not talking to lost people. Things as Christians, we need to control in our life. Paul's just saying, hey, this is the way a Christian lives. Now, if you don't, does that mean you're not a Christian? Absolutely not. We all struggle with things. I don't have all this. Well, none of us do, but we need to control that. We need to work on it. Now, Paul's saying this stuff doesn't need to be take over your life. I may lose my temper from time. I may get frustrated about something. I may get mad, kick the cat. Okay? But when I do, it hits me right then. I'm saying, Lord, forgive me. I need to work on it. I don't need to do it. Okay? So we're talking about these things not controlling your life. Okay? Now, verse 4. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeps his children under control of all dignity. For if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how would he take care of the church of God? Okay? So, listen. Once your children get on up in adulthood, that's their decision. But while they're under your roof, you were able to run your house effectively as a Christian family the way that you should. I tell you one thing I've noticed from teaching school for over 20 years, and I think school teachers, I think you'll agree with me. I think Judy, you'll agree with me. Kids that bring all this drama with them to school, and it's all the time just drama, and they're a mess. They get it at home. It's past that. It's all they know. I think stable Christian homes, and I'm not saying it's 100%, but stable Christian homes, kids that come out of that stuff and don't see that stuff, they're much more stable themselves. Okay? I've seen enough of that. I'll die on that hill. I believe that. Okay? Not a new convert. Okay? So it's somebody that's going to have experience in the Christian walk, somebody that's not new, so that he will not become conceited and fall into condemnation incurred by the devil. That's like anything. If you come into a position, I'm not going to go put an application down at the bank and become bank president the first day. It's like anything. You've got to work yourself. It takes experience. It takes time. You have to become ingrained in that culture. You have to know. It's like a Christian. You have to, if you're going to be an elder, you're going to be an overseer, you've got to have maturity. Okay? He must have a good reputation with those outside the church. Okay? So it's got to be a person of good reputation. Somebody that people say, hey, that's a good Christian man, even out in the world. So that he will not fall into disgrace and the snare of the devil. Now turn back to 1 Titus. Turn back to Titus chapter 1. Where we were at. Now we read verses 5 and we read verses 9. Now let's go verses 5 through 9. And you're going to see what Paul explains here. Once we read this, you're going to say, hey, we just read this in Timothy. So Paul is clear about expectations for elders. Okay? So start with verse 5, what we just read. For this reason, I left you in Crete, that you would set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. Namely, if any man is beyond reproach, the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of indecent behavior or rebellion. Now I want to stop right there. He's talking about people after their Christian walk. Okay? As we get on all these things. We've all got stuff in previous lives before we were Christian, and obviously that's one reason we're a Christian. We do things differently now than we did then. So something you might have done, something that happened 30 years ago, the way you lived your life 30, that's not talking about this. We're talking about you as a believer. Since you gave your life to Christ, since you accepted the Lord, what's your Christian walk like, right? Now, rebellion. Let me say one thing about rebellion. Rebellion's not necessarily because I stormed the Capitol or because I burned protests and burned a town down or I burned down a Tesla dealership or something like that. That could be rebellion. But if I read this stuff and I say, okay, I need to control my temper. I need to forgive. I need to do these things. But you know what? I'm just going to go on my own way and I'm not going to do it. That's rebellion. That's rebellion against God. He's told us what we've been told here, how we're to live our life. And as Christians, if we ought not to do that, we're living in rebellion. I have to be very careful. Things in my life that we all do, and we all got something that we struggle with. We all do. We're not perfect. I have to be careful, and I'm saying it here, that I don't say, well, you know, the rest of it's good, and yeah, it's okay, maybe, you know. No, and I know it's not. I've got to get that under control. We all do. We all need to take care of that. If we're not, we're in rebellion. Okay? For the overseer, verse 7, the overseer must be beyond reproach as God's steward. Now, steward, remember we talked about steward in the mystery several weeks ago. What God's given us, we're responsible with that. We're responsible stewards. Okay? So what he's given us, we're responsible with it. Not self-willed, so we're not stubborn. Okay? Not quick-tempered. Not indulging in wine, not a bully, there that goes again, not greedy for money, hospitable, the same words he uses in Timothy. But hospitable, loving what is good, self-controlled, righteous, holy, disciplined, okay? Man, those are great virtues. Holding firmly the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that we will be able to exhort sound doctrine and refute those who contradict it. So our lives, we're living our lives in perfect harmony. I'll tell you something I've noticed, Ken. When I do something I'm not supposed to do, or I do something and I'm outside the will of God, the harmony in my life is just totally messed up. I feel like I've caught a cold or something, and I'm drained, and my whole equilibrium's just off. Because when I am walking in harmony and right, man, I just feel so much better physically. I just feel like I'm in the right place. I've got more energy. I'm more energetic. I feel like all that. So these things here, for being an elder, these things are important. So the first same thing Paul says in Titus 1, he says in 1 Timothy. Every football coach, Charlie, you coach football. Coaches I had, just about every one of them said the same thing, okay? And that was, number one, control what you can control. In your life, control what you can control. There's things that I might worry about, and there's things that I might put my emphasis on. I've got no control over it whatsoever. I can't control what somebody else thinks about me. I can't control. We worry about things that we can't control. These are things we can control. That's where our emphasis is at. And then I had a coach used to say this, once you do that, don't let one mistake become two. Don't let two mistakes become 10. So if there's something here that's out of line and that's something you struggle with, don't just give up. And the next thing you know, you've got something else you're not taking care of. And it's like a house that's not kept, you know. I know when my mom and dad died and they'd been out of their house for about 3 months, I went to sit back to see it after 3 months and it looked like a settlers had come through there in 1800s and left it. I mean, it's just, and that's the way we can be, okay? So keep these things under control, okay? And these are things that we can control. John Wesley said, every elder is a pastor, a real pastor, and every pastor, including the senior pastor, is an elder, okay? Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. So we've looked at qualifications. We've looked at duties. Now you got to remember here, Paul was speaking to churches that had Gentiles and Jews. Peter's churches were predominantly Jewish, but they still structure here. And so Paul, they really didn't have the 12 apostles. The Jewish churches still had the apostles and things, so it was a little bit different here, but the structure was pretty well the same. So 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. Now Peter's going to speak to elders. Therefore, I urge elders among you as your fellow elders. So Peter says, look, I'm an elder too. What John Wesley say? Elders are pastors, pastors are elders. Why? They're able to teach, preach, they're able to oversee. As your fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and one who is also a fellow partaker of the glory that is to be revealed. So here's what the elders need to do. Same thing Paul said. Shepherd the flock of God among you. Exercise oversight. Not under compulsion, but voluntarily. What does that mean? They didn't take the elder role because somebody made them. They didn't take it because they felt that's what they had to do. They did it because they wanted to. Okay? They did it voluntarily. They weren't forced. All right? What are we as Christians? We're saved to work. Do I do good works to keep my salvation, or do I do good works because I want to? That's a fruit of the Spirit, right? That's what he's saying here. You're doing it voluntarily. According to the will of God, not with greed, but with eagerness. Now, how could you be greedy among this? Power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's what I've always heard. So people get into these positions, and it goes to their head. They love their power. They love to tell other people what to do. That's not what Paul said it was. You're to be, you know, you to love other people, not be a bully. Okay? All the things that he said, Peter's saying here. You don't do it with greed, you do it with eagerness. Not yet as domineering over those assigned to your care. So you're not bullying these people. They're under your care. Okay? But by proving to be examples to the flock. Do as I do, not as I say. What's Peter saying? And if you go back and read, remember we said Acts 20, 17 through 30. We just read 28. If you'll read 17 through 30, Paul lays out the example that he set. Okay? So, quiet leadership, what I call it. The best leaders are not just, they don't have to make themselves known where they're announcing it to everybody and they're barking out orders. They're leading by example. I see a lot of people in this church who are just solid. They don't say much and they just lead by example. We've got some of the salt of the earth people here. We've got plenty of people here that exemplify that. Okay? Now finally, turn to 1 Timothy chapter 3. The appointment. 1 Timothy, so we've talked chapter 3. We're going to go verse 10. So we've spoken about duties. We've spoken about qualifications of elders. Now the appointment. Now, you see what it says. He said, you've proven to be examples to the flock. That takes time. You don't set examples overnight. Now, your first influence you have on somebody, the first time they see you, that's important, but it takes time. You've got to know that person's legitimate. You've got to, it's about earning trust, really. So 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 10. These men must also first be tested, then have them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. So it's somebody. Let's say we did it here. There's individuals that have set examples over time that we know are legitimate. Okay? It's not somebody that we just met. Well, he sounds like a good guy. Hey, be an elder. Well, we don't know him. Okay? So it's somebody that you know has set that example and lives that way. Okay? Now, I want you to notice one thing. He says, have them first serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. I visited an individual this week who grew up in the Church of Christ, okay? And I was visiting with him, and I've been reading his stuff, and I said, hey, let me ask you a question. What was the Church of Christ hierarchy? And he said, well, the younger guys, they appointed as deacons, okay? And then after a time, it may have been a long time, then certain ones would, if they were good, responsible at what they did. Later on, they would become elders, but that would be way on down the road. So he says here, after they've been tested, first they become deacons, second they become elders. Now, deacons and elders are not the same thing. Okay, so next week we're going to do deacons. Deacons is not the spiritual overseer. Deacons are more administration to people at the church, taking care of the church's needs. Not the spiritual needs, but earthly needs. Okay? So, he says, first of all, they become deacons, and then they become elders. So, until they get into spiritual leadership, they have to prove that they're good, as he says, good stewards, okay? So next week, we'll talk about the deacons and then how the deacons assist the elders as more as we get into the structure. So we'll have a lot to say about that. So, like I said, elders today, deacons next week. I've learned things this week. They're totally two separate things, okay? So, I guess in closing, not only do we learn about this, but ask yourself. Go back and read these not as qualifications for elders and deacons, but as looking at your life as a Christian. What needs to be there? What doesn't need to be there? I can't answer for you. You can't answer for me. Look at yourself in that and say, Lord, I want you to be able to use me. It may not be in these roles. It may not be anything like this. But we all have roles in the body of Christ that we serve to minister to others. And we need to have as much good in and as much bad out as possible. Okay? So, as Martha Jo comes, and like I said, I've learned a lot from this week, but like I said, just for Christian growth. And I know when I read it, there'll be certain things. You should have this in your life, it jumps out. You shouldn't have this in your life, it jumps out. Pray that, you know, Lord, help me in these situations. Help me to be a better Christian and to have the right things in there that I should have. And Lord, whatever's in there that doesn't need to be in there, help me get it out and help me with that. Okay? Watch it. Thank you.